Joining me online now is going to be one of the featured speakers at the upcoming social media camp. Joe Wozni is the CEO at Concentric IS, and he is the voice I turn to explain all things to me ad-related as far as online ads are concerned. Joe's the author of The Digital Dollar, which is an awesomely good read if you want to learn about the changing economy based on the online world. And Joe, I'm thrilled to have you join me and have a quick chat today.
Thank you, Steve. I welcome the opportunity.
So the world of online advertising is really what you concentrate on. And is that now being fractured, or is there a difference when people look at the world of Facebook advertising versus the traditional world of AdSense advertising that are embedded in websites and that sort of stuff?
I would say that we focus on business integration, particularly online business integration and strategy, and advertising, marketing, brand awareness, all are component of it.
Yeah.
And I would see that we are seeing some of the advertising, some of the social media networks, for an example, whether it be Facebook, yeah, Twitter, or the like, follow more of a traditional advertising model than we've seen in the past. And that's usually for visibility of your ads or visibility of your posts.
And just, and also ease of use. I think it's easier for people to get their heads around some of those channels as opposed to the traditional ones.
I think so. I think that people understand what a post is. And so therefore, if you want your post to have a bit of prominence and to be sent out to people who are like your audience, well, there's an easy way to do it. So the vernacular is a little bit the same, but it still becomes an advertising unit.
Yes. And let's take a step back and just talk about if people are looking at online advertising, about, you know, just the kind of the matrix of opportunities that they have. Because you started to talk about you can use it not just for sales, but for list building, for marketing, for education, for brand awareness. There's so many different outcomes that one can gain from online advertising.
Yeah, there are, and it really depends on what activity you want to undertake, Steve. For an example, let's say I'll give you an example of search positioning.
Okay.
Oftentimes, for a new organization, it's tough to be located in organic search in a great spot against their competition.
Mm-hmm.
So, provided you have a good quality score on the type of channel that you want to promote, you can use advertising purely as a way to buy yourself position in top search locations.
And it's
probably a lot less than what SEO would cost you.
So when a company or when a small entrepreneur is starting to think about extending their brand, about growing their marketplace, and using advertising, actually spending money on promoting their products online, where does the conversation start? If I'm come to you, and it doesn't matter whether I'm a pizza place or a pet groomer or an outsourcing service, where do you start talking to your clients about how they make a decision of where they should be playing and how they should be playing in the space?
Well, I think the first suggestion we try to understand is business strategy.
Okay.
And if we can understand some of the business strategy and the activities that and assist them with understanding the activities that they're going to focus on, we then have the ability to create a roadmap and understand what's the strategy for them and what are their goals. And that's probably the best place to start prior to getting into operational issues such as ad planning and channel planning and database building and web page development and the like.
And this is kind of where I kind of smile when I think about online advertising versus traditional advertising. I think and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the traditional advertising world, the preponderance of the money or the bulk of the money was spent on the ad buy, on actually purchasing the ad, be it on TV or be it in newspapers. The money was spent in the actual placement. In the online world, isn't more real money, as opposed when I'm talking about the hours and cycles spent and the energy and all of that, put into the planning of it, putting it into the systems that are going to support it, the methods that are going to capture the information out of it, the decision-making process on where placement's going to happen and the filtering of who it's going to be actually delivered to. Aren't you spending really far more in that than you are in the actual dollars that you spend with whichever carrier delivers the ad?
Well, I think it depends on what your focus for online advertising is, Steve. If your focus for online advertising is branding, then you may find that the majority of your spend is actually on media.
Okay.
Really, at the end of the day, if you look at this, I think this comes down to kind of the change in the sales funnel.
Yes. Okay.
And others would argue that there is no change in the sales funnel, but it seems like it seems like the awareness, the interest, consideration, intent, and evaluation component of the sales funnel all tends to be taken up with marketing activities from a digital perspective. And those marketing activities have everything to do with content marketing through the right distribution channels, generating original content, CMS preparation, webinars, seminars, and the like. And then the purchasing activation component is always on. And so measuring what type of components convert, and in turn, understanding that the visitor has the choice of where they want to convert from an ad, as far as where they want to engage with the organization, it just makes it a little bit more complex. Mm-hmm. And we try to boil everything down, in most cases, if it's not branding related, to a cost per acquisition.
Mm.
And so therefore understanding, it's not just necessarily about where are you getting the least expensive click-through rate. It's more about the fact of what is the real cost of the overall cost of the channel in relation to the lead or the sign up or the sale that you've generated.
And you talked about the sales funnel. And when I think of that, I think of it as, and you did say a few of the words, I think increasingly that it's relationship building. It's, and you use the word engagement. You know, in the past, I mean, when we think about classic advertising things, if they could get you wearing their logo as you walked out of the trade show or on your mug, they'd done an awful lot of good brand building and that sort of stuff. But today the relationship is you want to hear my words coming out of your mouth. You want to be reading my content as your trusted source to learn about whatever the area is that I'm ultimately going to be selling you a product in. So it's far deeper as far as the relationship goes, and far more work has to be done on basically proving your worth.
On proving your worth, as well as, I would agree, on proving your worth is a good way to put it, Steve, and in understanding how to engage with people and where they want to be engaged with, particularly because the visitor is in the driver's seat.
In one way, for people like me, I think it's kind of liberating to know that, to understand that in a lot of cases, it's not learning the tricks of the trade, which I think advertising used to be, but instead it's providing real value. If you can provide real value and then learn how to deliver that real value in an optimal manner, that's probably a recipe for success. Maybe not massive, you know, meteoric success, but real business success.
I say that it is a recipe for success, most definitely, but I think we are reaching a saturation point in some cases for content.
Mm.
And that saturation point is basically there's only a finite number of people who are able actually to view your content. And so therefore, for content creators, I think it's in small and medium businesses, I think it's really important to have good relationships with the distribution channels that they work with and create content and some of the personalized items that you've said in relation to those distribution channels, be it the fact that there's just a tremendous amount of content and content marketing that's taking place right now.
That's interesting. That kind of flies in the face of what I was thinking. So I'm going to get you to kind of back that up a bit. So you're saying that there is now there is certainly a dearth of content. And when we see it being, especially in the social channels, being reposted in the pablum form of, and I do it myself, you know, five best ideas around this, the five best ways to do that. So there's certainly an overwhelming amount of content in those sort of spaces. But you say that we're reaching saturation with the marketplace. I always kind of felt like because of the new channels, because of the volume of people that we have access to on Facebook or that we have access to through Google search or through YouTube, that the market, that the potential market was almost unlimited for most products.
Well, it's interesting that some of the research that we've been looking at, when you look at content saturation indexes, such as something written by Marcus Sheridan.
Okay.
He says that paid media for content distribution is very important. So you should, of course, use your paid media for your typical online advertising model, such as Facebook or Twitter and the like.
Mm-hmm.
But he said building real relationships with media outlets to match the demographics of your intended audience is really important as well.
So boil that down into an activity that an enterprise could engage on. Building a relationship with a media outlet. What does that look like?
Well, let's take an example of, let's say, marketing props.
Okay.
And you may be a business that is in the digital agency business or is involved in some sort of SEO activities.
Yep.
Well, it makes sense to have a relationship with marketing profs and to have your blogs distributed over their network.
Yes. Okay.
And so, therefore, that would be an example of some types of advertising that, as you say, from the beginning of our conversation, are a little bit more complex than traditional advertising. It's not about purchasing placement. It's actually about content creation, understanding what their audience is, having a relationship with one of those groups, and in turn, then having your content distributed over their network.
Now, I imagine that you have a decision-making process then whether you're going to be pablum and straight up and give really good solid information or you're going to choose a side and get somewhat sensationalistic. You know, I'm reading a lot these days about how Facebook likes are fake and people are getting on one side of that fence or the other side of that fence and voicing very strong opinions. And I sense that they're getting more traction in the reading of their content than the people who are saying this is how you grow a Facebook, you know, this is how you create Facebook likes. So being a little bit controversial, a little bit on one side of the fence or the other.
Well, I think there's two types of content, Steve. There's content for business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in business, you're usually solving problems for people.
Yep.
And then there's content for entertainment.
Okay.
And so,
you mean they're not the same, Joe?
That's so true. And content for entertainment, if you look at what is viral or what really attracts people, there's always an X factor. And you know, quality isn't probably the first word that you use sometimes to describe what we see from a viral point of view.
Interesting, because you know when I'm as I think about my favorite sources that I go to for information about the online world, there's a blog post. Oh, what's his name? It escapes me for a moment. But there are a few fairly opinionated personalities that get talking about the online internet marketing world, and I love listening to them because I learn a lot from them. But because they're so opinionated, I make a decision each time whether or not I agree with them or disagree with them, and I feel like I'm learning in either case because I'm hearing their side of the story, but then I'm filtering it through my own filters and making my own decision on it. Is that not kind of almost the new breed of business communicator?
I don't know if that's the new breed of business communicator, but I think the fact that we all have to filter the information from the internet and take with it what's important to us is probably a good source of learning. And it's the same for advertising. You know, somebody told me the other day, the internet is a fire hydrant or a large fire hose, for example, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The person, you might actually recognize the name, Derek Halpern. Have you listened to any of his work?
No, I haven't.
Okay, Derek he's a fairly intelligent guy, but he's like a Boston, super opinionated, out there, and giving his opinion on all sorts of things. But the thing that I really respect about him is he does his research on all of his topics, and he makes sure, like when he interviews an author, he's read the book cover to cover and really challenges the author on a lot of points. And so consequently, he's earned my respect because he knows his stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I follow like a sheep and listen to everything that he says. And I just,
I
find that sort of business conversation to be really engaging. Let's get back onto the ads because I've managed to drift us off into my own personal interests, which is not really the purpose of this particular podcast. Let's go back into the ad world. And do you sense that there's kind of two darlings of the social media advertising world today in the terms that we see so often of split testing and now these retargeting? Are those both terms that all of our audience should understand what's happening with?
Well, I think they should understand definitely split testing or A/B testing.
Yes.
And it's been established for a long time, but I think more people are just becoming aware of it.
Is that because it's so approachable now with the different technologies?
I think that's one of the reasons. For an example, the 5-second test, Steve.
Okay.
It's a great way to test new creative at a low cost and without the hassle of a lot of the other split testing that we see. And Ivana Taylor from DIY Marketing writes something in our spring edition of Digital Dollars and Cents about this.
What is the 5-second?
The 5-second test is basically you take your creative, you load it up on 5secondtest.com. You then have questions that you want to ask your audience. You facilitate your audience logging into a link, and they get you receive feedback from A and for A and B testing based on the types of creative that you present to them.
So, what is it in it for the people who are giving you feedback?
I think what's in it for them usually is your trusted network.
Okay.
So in fact, you can get a pretty good segmentation, or you can just invite people, as we talked about earlier in our content conversation. Mm-hmm. If you have a large following, it's a great way to get some test data.
Well, that's interesting. 5-second test. Yeah. The usability hub. Take a 5-second. So you can just go in and basically you load your creative, and that's any piece of creative. It can be a video. It can be a video.
It could be a web page shot. It could be an ad. It could be whatever you want. You set the questions that you'd like people to ask, or you'd like people to answer. And if it's, don't ask too many. And because they only really have 5 seconds, but it is an interesting dynamic of what you can get from an A/B test, and that's a simple A/B test. Of course, A/B testing or split testing has there's a lot more detail one can go into as well, and I think that depends on time and budget.
Yes, and there are tools you can use, or you just do them yourselves
Completely. Yeah. And Google has a lot of good tools, and there's lots of other companies who have great tools in the social networks. And then retargeting.
Let's talk about that, because that seems Facebook has just included a form of retargeting in their ads, and all of the social media world is abuzz with it. This is what you have to do, and we've all noticed it.
Yes, but retargeting's been around for a while. They used to call it remarketing.
Okay.
And I'm not quite sure who originally did it, who originally created the remarketing component, but remarketing, probably 3 or 4 years ago, Google introduced it on some of their pay-per-click networks. And it's interesting. I understand the whole concept of remarketing is if you've seen an ad and you don't happen to react on it, it'll track you and follow you around for a certain period of time.
Yeah, well, actually... It's not if you've seen the ad, if you've visited a site or you clicked on, if you've interacted, not just seen, but especially from what I understand, most of it comes from if you visited somebody's site or gone into their shopping cart, they drop a cookie on your browser.
Correct. I'm sorry, I just didn't word it right. But, interestingly, at Concentric, we've talked to a lot of our customers about this and offered them those options. And a lot of them are quite uncomfortable with it when they look at it personally, that they wouldn't like to be tracked around in that sense.
The creep factor.
Yeah. So even for an example, some of the networks, you in your terms of service, you legally have to put a notice in that you're doing this with your customers.
Okay.
So I think, sometimes things are all the norm and it's great. But if you take any of these back to how you'd like to be treated... And some people probably don't mind it, but I'm surprised at a lot of the Concentric corporate customers and others who I talk to in the industry who are quite uncomfortable with being tracked.
That's interesting because as I think about it, I look at the opposite side of that coin, and I do get that. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of ironic that there's one company who I've actually purchased their services who I consider to be a little bit of a... Well, they're a company that does a seminar replay service. Now, I don't use their core service. Their core service is it's one of those seminars that you take the seminar and it looks like it's live, but it's actually pre-recorded. And so it's kind of I think it's a terrible way to start a relationship with the customers by lying to them. But there are these, and we've all seen them, where you sign up and it says sign up at this certain time, and it looks like it's a live seminar. They didn't know where do they say it's recorded, but you can tell it's recorded if you know what you're looking for. But they also have some just great seminar delivery tools that I use as part of my webinars. So I bought their service. It's like $75 a month. Yet regardless, but every time I enter Facebook or any site that's part of those ad networks, their ads are still appearing. So he hasn't actually configured his ads correctly to notice when it's got a customer or not and remove the cookie from my site. So he's spending money advertising to his existing customers. But it shows, you know, it shows how people have to learn on that space.
I agree. And, you know, possibly, you know, the kind of the darlings of the social media world with split testing and retargeting. My favorite one is still are still extensions.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with
extensions,
but
tell me about it.
But if you see an ad and underneath the ad there's a variety of either pictures or links and you can read the ad, but yet you can click on either the links. Perhaps it's a picture of an artwork if a company sells art online.
Okay.
And perhaps if it's access to specific links on a website if the company say sells services online. And the extensions have a tremendous CTR. So the click-through rates are really high. And when you look at it past that into the conversion rates, things like cost per conversion or someone who signed up, the ad extensions tend to be extremely strong, more stronger that I found through personal experience than retargeting. And you're seeing that Google offers ad extensions now. Bing, I was at a Bing seminar last week, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And Bing is now having, link extensions and product extensions planned. So you're seeing several of the ad networks, and I'm sure the social ad networks will follow suit of potentially offering extensions to their customers.
So I need you to explain it a little bit more detail to me. Is it only when you mouse over that you see the extensions drop down?
It all depends on the feature of the network. I've seen it that way, but I've also seen them right below the ad.
Okay, so let's look at an example. Let's say you're selling cameras, and so you're a Photoshop. How would you use extensions in an ad?
You could use it in a few ways. You could either take your database of which they call a feed in most cases, which looks like an Excel spreadsheet. You could take the pictures of all the products that you're selling and match them against your ad and match them against keywords, so that therefore when someone typed in the keywords as an example, or however the ad was being triggered, pictures of your products would show up along with those pictures would be hot linked, as well as your location or any messaging that you had around that.
And that is a dynamic version of your ad based on it. So is that is Amazon doing that a lot? Because I noticed I was looking for a notebook case the other day. I did a search for a notebook case. I was looking for a 13-inch case for a PowerBook. And now I'm getting all sorts of different notebook ads for notebook cases, all of those different cases appearing in different sidebars. Is that what we're talking about?
I'm not familiar if Amazon is doing that or not.
Okay.
But I wouldn't want
to. But I also did Google search for it. I also did Google search in a couple.
Without a doubt, Google is doing it all the time. And then similar to your link extension, that was a product extension. Your link extensions are links that you may want to highlight in your website that show up beside your ad. And location extensions, of course, are showing a map with your location. And call extensions are the ability to have a click for call right beside your ad or click to call.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen a few of those.
So those tend to be a little bit more interactive, and retargeting is great. You're showing the person the ad on a regular basis, as we discussed, but sometimes offering a bit more of a variety to get someone's attention with extensions is a good idea.
The one thing, you know, kind of just circling back for a few more seconds with the retargeting, the thing that I believe that is the most value for retargeting is for small enterprises to look big, because of where the ads appear. I'm not sure that the marketplace, that the average consumer is savvy enough to know that if they go to the Globe and Mail and they see a Joe Wozni ad for his book, that they don't think that you're advertising on Globe and Mail, that they don't realize that you're not advertising on Globe and Mail, but you're part of the AdSense or an ad network.
That could be true, but I don't know if they care.
I do think they care. I think it's part of social proof. I think, well, I said
that in jest in a bit, but
yeah.
You're right. It's part of social proof. It makes sense, and there is some benefit. But just on our customer feedback, it doesn't seem something that corporate businesses who are just comfortable with at this time.
And that's why you're here, because I think you know from the stats. You look at the figures, whereas I just go, you know, I feel like this is the way it should be. And so that's the big difference between.
Well, and I'm giving you anecdotal feedback, but it's generally when I'm talking to business owners, execs, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and we get into the details of tracking, I'd say 50% don't necessarily care for it.
Got it. I wonder if that's also part and parcel of the age demographic of most of the customers. I'm wondering that might be a baby boomer type thing, and I'm wondering if that's a generational bias that might be going away with the younger entrepreneurs.
Well, we ask our clientele and the people I speak with are from anywhere from 18 to 70.
Really?
Yes. I'm not just referring to maybe someone in my demographic.
I'm referring to
demographics that are younger than myself and all the way to, you know, early 20s.
Joe, I make it a rule to try not to talk to anybody under the age of 45. I find my life is far happier.
Exactly right.
Let's talk about your talk at Social Media Camp. What are you going to be focusing on?
Well, I am going to be focusing on some really interesting information that I think is relevant to the audience, and it's going to be about choosing the right digital marketing model and roadmaps for winning over and retaining your customers in the digital area. And what I mean by that is that I'll be talking about research and case studies about four effective digital marketing models, particularly that we have quite a bit of data that digital marketing is maturing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk about the eight capabilities, and I'll keep it to eight, but the capabilities that organizations require to execute those marketing models and what activities they should focus on. So for an example, people who are one of the marketing models is demand generators, and demand generators really focus, and they're typically retailers or someone focusing on maximizing their marketing efficiency for a share of the wallet. So they in turn want to drive engagement, and they want to drive volume and efficiency in order to have people sign up to an activity or purchase something. So I'll talk a bit about demand generators and how social influence and advocacy, what they should be doing in social, how they should be managing their omnichannel presence, why optimizing content may not be as important. So the discussion will take a look at models that have research proves to be effective, case studies that shows how organizations use them, and how to integrate that into your business.
That's good. I love the case studies. Quite often, I mean, you understand what you're talking about when you use the terms. A lot of us need, this is what Nike does, or this is what Air Canada did in this space, or this is how, you know, this is how a local coffee shop did these things.
Yeah, and I think when we look at British Columbia, and I know Social Media Camp is attended by people all from all over the world. It's a great event. But even if we look at just British Columbia, you know, most of our businesses, there's about 350,000 small businesses with under 50 employees in British Columbia.
Wow.
So talking about these models are great, but ensuring that there's relevancy for the people who are listening to take information and actually use it is extremely important.
That's where the penny is going to drop. So who do you want to see in your audience?
I would say a few different groups. I'd say if you're involved in digital marketing or you're managing it, please come, because you'll gain some knowledge. I would say definitely any size of business. If you're a solopreneur to a small or medium-sized business or a government agency or a not-for-profit, you can see some of these digital marketing models because they're not industry-specific and they speak to more characteristics of how you're going to get your business goals out to the world through digital marketing. And so anyone who wants to step back from their day-to-day operations and reflect on what they're doing and why is another group of people, line managers and execs. We've tailored this presentation and talk to a wide range of people because I think these models and the skills that come underneath that and the case studies are applicable for everyone.
I think it's incredibly important for leaders to understand what the potential of online is, and I don't think most do. You know, I mean, you can take it's I don't know if you've done this, but I certainly, you know, with my friends who are entrepreneurs or small businessmen, you know, just taking them in as simple a tour as in how you can target ads within Facebook, they don't realize what, you know, what the potential in how efficient online advertising can be, because quite often I think we think about advertising as the next word behind advertising is expensive, and it doesn't have to be expensive, but it has to be honored, and you have to do it efficiently, and then it becomes just a tremendous tool.
And one of the reasons for writing the Digital Dollar, Steve, was exactly that. It was the fact that every day there's a lot of smart people, but understanding the basics of what's taking place in online is really important for everyone to have the same vernacular and understand some of the concepts.
Yeah, and it's not a crapshoot. I mean, the bottom line is we have the invasion of privacy that we're all lamenting is a personal issue that might diminish some things in our lives. But as a business person trying to reach out to a community, trying to reach out to an audience, trying to build your market, it is a godsend.
Yeah, and the one thing I'd like everybody, what are people going to learn from attending the presentation that I'm giving is really, I think the most important thing, a few things. One, you'll be able to get a bit of an idea of a benchmark about where you fit against some of the research and the models that show to be working. And it'll either affirm for you that you're doing everything right, or it may help you with placing emphasis on some of the things you may consider to do. It may give you some new ideas. And if you're just new and you don't even have a plan, it's a great starting place.
I'm looking forward to it. I will certainly be in attendance. I think that the overall conference is going to be exciting. Have you checked out the other speakers, or is there anything you're really looking forward to as well at Social Media Camp?
I think the keynotes, generally, I really enjoy the keynotes, and mm-hmm. I really enjoy actually every seminar. The one thing that I find really tough at Social Media Camp is to take all of them into consideration.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much. So there's and I think actually just even the sharing of ideas with people that you meet, because I tend to meet a lot of new people. People who I've never met before, and sharing ideas with them. So I think the whole culture that Social Media Camp creates, and the whole learning environment and the collegial environment. So there's so much that I don't know if I just have one thing that really strikes out as I have to see. I think at the end of it, I could probably listen to a whole webcast of the whole camp over through bits and pieces and students thoroughly enjoy it.
Absolutely. But from what I hear, the guy that's talking about YouTube is going to be awesome. Yeah, I just heard that.
Excellent.
That's the buzz anyways. That's the buzz. Joe, where do people find concentrics.com is concentrics.com is your website?
Concentrics. Concentric is .com.
Is.com. Okay.
Yes. So concentric is .com. And the digital dollar is the digitaldollar.com. And I encourage everyone, if you haven't taken a look at the book, to please do that. And of course, if you'd like any information on me, joewozny.com, WOZNY.
And where do they sign up for your newsletter? Because your newsletter is outstanding.
Well, you can sign up for the newsletter on any of those three locations. There's a button at the top that says sign up for newsletter.
Yeah, and it's well worth it. Yeah, I know you spend a lot of energy on making sure that there's really good value in your newsletter, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. We only send it out quarterly, and it's called Digital Dollars and Cents, and this edition coming out this week is about 12 pages long because it works in a flipbook format.
Okay.
As opposed to a traditional newsletter, and you can read it on your tablet or your iPhone or on your browser on your computer. And we get a lot of good feedback from people because it focuses on online business integration and what are the opportunities, what are the things you need to know. Everybody's busy, but there's only so much time to track all this information and to provide some really good analysis on.
If you're interested in meeting Joe in person, come on down to Social Media Camp, find him online, sign up for the newsletter, and I am looking forward to spending some time with you and breaking some bread in Victoria in a couple weeks' time, Joe. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, Dave.